Hello, sports fans. It's time once again to head off to the book. get started. Hi, BD Harrell here. This is Epiphany, Chapter 17. Last time, if you remember, we had done Chapter 16, and Chapter 15. The end of Chapter 16, we had Dan about ready to go into the proverbial belly of the beast. Something that we're going to be getting resolved to a certain degree when we get over here. Alrighty. Give it in 3, 2, 1. Chapter 17. A commotion on the other end of the hallway became the pinch which helped Dan Stevens wake up from what was fast becoming a nightmare. "Sheriff, that better be my prisoner you have there," James Hamner's voice boomed down the hallway. Dan's heart started beating again. "Goddamn nigger," Sheriff Pinkerman hissed under his breath. "If that's Daniel Stevens, he needs to come with me to the federal lockup in Fairmont. He's too damn dangerous for you in this rinky-dink outfit, Pinkerman." James reached the trio at the steel door, flashed his badge, and took hold of Dan's arm. "But I didn't," Dan started to defend himself. "You keep quiet," James ordered. "I don't want to hear a word out of you. Are those the prisoner's belongings, Sheriff?" The sheriff spit in the container where just minutes ago Dan was instructed to put his clothes. Agent Hamner let go of Dan, grabbed hold of the sheriff, and pulled him right up to his face. "I've had all I can stand out of you, Sheriff," James growled. "I have a good mind to take you into custody for tampering with evidence. One more peep out of you and I'll have a federal marshal lock you up for hampering my investigation. Have I made myself clear?" The sheriff made a small nodding motion. The G-man pushed him away. "You," he commanded the person guarding the door, "take this man's belongings and follow me out to my car." James herded Dan and the unfortunate door ward out of the hallway and through the booking area and outside to a waiting car. He was quite literally stuffed into the back seat and told not to move while his belongings went into the trunk. James then dismissed the deputy and drove Dan away from the sheriff's office. "I thought you were my friend," Dan said once they were clear of the building. "What's this about taking me to a federal lockup?" "There is no federal lockup. I'm getting away from that idiot sheriff. If you were in real trouble with me, you'd be in handcuffs right now. Fasten your seatbelt." Dan suddenly came to the realization that aside from being in the back seat of a government-issued issued car and wearing an orange jumpsuit, he was a free man. "It'll probably take him about 15 minutes to figure out that he's been bamboozled. By that time, we'll have you tucked out of the way where he can't find you." "How? Where?" Dan asked. "Practically right under his nose," James told him. "Beasley's up at your cabin waiting to take you up on the ridge. We've got what I hope is a good solid lead on our perpetrator, and we hope to get him under lock and key in the next couple of days." Dan's curiosity was satisfied for the moment. He let down his guard for the time being while he was being driven back to the cabin where his troubles began earlier in the day. Beasley was there to meet him. She was sitting on the front porch guarding a pair of backpacks. There was little time for formalities. James recovered Dan's clothes from the trunk and told him to put them on. Dan stripped out of the jumpsuit and put on his regular clothes while Beasley and James loaded the backpacks into the back of his car. "You may want to wear these instead of your regular shoes," Beasley suggested, handing him a pair of hiking shoes. "I talked with your wife and told her what was going on. She gave me your sizes and I pulled together some things you'll need for our trek." "I need to talk with her," Dan told Beasley. "Could I use your phone?" "It would be better if you didn't," she informed him. "She knows that you're safe and she knows that we're working to keep you that way." "Why can't I talk with her?" "We don't have cell coverage out here and we don't want to have time to find a landline," Beasley explained. "You two quit jabbering," James demanded. "Let's get in this car and let's get out of here." In less than a minute, they were roaring south on the state highway. They went out of the valley, then headed out a rural lane at a quick yet safe pace. At what seemed to be the end of a road, they crossed a low bridge over a rocky creek. The road became gravel and wound uphill through a forest for what seemed to Dan to be forever. While they ascended, Beasley pulled out a map to study. "How much further?" James asked once they appeared to emerge out of the woods. About 3 miles, Beasley answered, folding the map. We should have enough light to make it a mile off the road to a place we can camp for the night.
We're camping? Dan asked.
Sorry, no cabins up here, Beasley told him. This is a wilderness area. Golly sods. We'll be safe here while the Sheriff Numbnuts tries to figure out where you are in the trail between Davis and the resort.
Why would he be looking here?
We left him some clues. Your jumpsuit, my car, Beasley shot Dan a devilish grin. Julia, if asked, will tell the sheriff she saw us going up to the cabin, so he makes the logical leap and sends his posse up on the trail between the resort and Blackwater.
Here? James asked, slowing down the car.
About a half mile further. There's a cutout. You'll see it, Beasley replied.
The three of us, right?
Dan saw James' face twisted up in the rearview mirror.
Just the two of you, James said. I need to go back down the mountain to keep an eye on things.
Over there, James.
Beasley pointed out a spot where James could pull off to the side of the road to allow passengers access to a trailhead.
James pulled off to the side so he'd get out to help Dan and Beasley unload the camping supplies in the trunk. In less than 3 minutes, a pair of backpacks and a duffel bag were on the ground. Beasley and Dan watched James drive back down the gravel road in the same direction from which they came.
Well, put down your pack and let's go, Beasley announced. We're going about a mile west, then a little north before we get a place to camp.
She picked up one of the packs, slinging it on her back. It was obvious to Dan that she had done this before. He puzzled over the arrangement before picking up the other pack. In his trial lift, he was amazed that the pack wasn't as heavy as he might have guessed. Beasley gave him some instruction before helping him don the load. Making sure that her charge was comfortable, she picked up the duffel, then headed away from the road using a lightly used path.
When do we stop? He asked after they had hiked for about 10 minutes.
When we get there.
Are there facilities on the way?
No, we're packing everything we need on our backs.
I mean, is there a bathroom? Dan asked.
Stop and pee wherever you want. I'll wait.
I don't have to pee.
Beasley stopped.
If you need to take a crap, wait a moment.
She reached around, took a folding spade from the outside of her backpack.
Here, she said, handing him the spade.
What you do is dig a small hole with this. Squat and do your business, then cover the hole back up. There are some wipes to clean yourself in your backpack.
Well, the idea of defecating in the open held little appeal to Dan. Besides, he didn't really need to go at the moment. He thanked Beasley for the instruction, then returned her spade.
Just a little advice when the time comes, Beasley mentioned when they were back on their way. You need to be careful where you dig. This whole area was part of a firing range back during the war. There's still pieces of unexploded ordnance out there.
You're kidding, he said.
No, I'm not. There are signs by the side of the road warning people.
Are the old shells still being found?
Well, every once in a great while, yeah, mostly harmless, but they're still out there.
Dan made a mental note to stay close to Beasley and not wander off the trail.
An hour after they left the gravel road, they came on a relatively flat and open spot on the trail. It was obvious by the presence of a fire ring that this had been a stopping point for other campers.
We should be good here for the night, Beasley announced. If you need it, there's a pit about 150 feet away, which is usable. A makeshift latrine, if you will.
Dan thanked her, found the wipes, and went to do his business. When he returned, Beasley had already set up a small dome tent and was in the process of gathering pieces of wood to start a fire.
Well, where do I set up my tent? Dan asked when he had her attention.
We're sharing this one, Beasley told him. It's a little cozy, but we'll manage.
I don't know if I can trust you.
I think it's more of a case you may not know if you can trust yourself, she pointed out. I can appear to be an easy target, considering that your wife is 200 miles away and bearing the battle scars of having children. I'd be tempted too if I were you.
Well, this is an awkward situation.
It's only as awkward as you care to make it, Mr. Stevens.
Beasley excused herself and headed toward the pit while Dan wished that he had a cell phone so he could call Emily. He sat down on one of the rocks in the fire ring and started to explore what items he had in his pack. Near the top, he found that Beasley had packed his Bible.
You told me that there were Wiccan
When we first met today earlier, Dan commented when she returned, "I see that you packed my Bible. Why?" "Because I respect your beliefs," she told him. "You respected me when I told you what I believed. I thought I'd just reciprocate." "The golden rule," he smiled. "All religions I know of practice it in some form," Beasley responded, sitting down on a rock opposite Dan. "Same goes for everything in the world around us. Take our little hike, for example. We tread carefully and respect the environment so the environment doesn't bother us in return. Make a misstep, and there are any number of ways you can end up having a bad day. By the way," she added, "I called your wife and let her in on our plans for you. Gave her a full disclosure. She seems to be okay with the arrangement." "Really?" he asked. "What about you? What about your significant other? I mean, what do you know about me?" "James and I had you vetted before he even took you to the burned-out church, for one," Beasley started. "We know more about you than you might even know about you. At first, I suggested you staying with him in his apartment up in Maryland. He suggested this trip, said something about a trip in the wilderness being helpful to where you were in your life. As far as having a significant other, I have no significant other, and I really don't anticipate ever having one. If I did, what I do on my job is my business alone." "So this is just a job for you," he said. "Well, yes and no. Yes, this is my job, but at the same time, I love coming up here. You'll see why after it gets dark." Beasley proceeded to go through her pack, unloading items she thought would be helpful, including some freeze-dried dinners. She enlisted Dan's help in building and lighting a small fire, all the while guiding the conversation and winding around his personal life. "Your boys sound like they could be a handful," she remarked after Dan told her about Jacob and Peter. "Al Jacob's to the point in life where he's starting to chase girls," Dan laughed. "Well, you were pretty shy at that point in your life, as I understand it." Dan blushed a little. Beasley embarrassed him more, relating that she found out about Dan's dating life before he met Emily. "She's lucky, you know," Beasley remarked. "I'm the lucky one," he replied. "You know, until I met her, I never thought there was such a thing as love at first sight." By this point in their conversation, the sun had gone beyond the horizon. The lingering twilight painted in various hues of orange and violet. Stars started to come out to start their nightly travels through the skies. The fire which cooked their supper and warmed their souls had died down to the point where it seemed pointless to continue fueling the blaze. "You said something about not having a significant other," Dan probed. "Do you think you'll ever find someone to share your life with?" "Sound like a matchmaker," Beasley said with a twinkle in her voice. "I'm already in love with the world around me. I feel complete, like you do with Emily." "I can respect that," Dan told her after thinking for a few moments. She got up and bade him good night. He stayed outside of the tent for the better part of an hour, wondering if it was okay for him to go inside and crawl in his sleeping bag. At the same time, he marveled in awe of the universe unfolding around him. A different set of night noises played out. He almost fell asleep a couple of times before deciding it was time to go inside. After saying a short prayer for Emily and his children, he slipped into the tent, crawled over the sleeping woman inside, and wrapped himself into his dreams in a sleeping bag. That's about it for that chapter. Chapter 18 is going to be back with Emily. Over the same night. Have a few surprises going to be coming up over the next several weeks, so stay tuned for it. So glad to you could join us on this little adventure of Epiphany. In the meantime, author B.D. Harrell, and wishing you good night, good news, and be seeing you.